Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Welcome to Speaking of Everything. The leading news story as we went to air was the imminent government shutdown. The Republicans control both houses of Congress and the White House, but are saying if a spending bill can't be passed to keep the government running, it's the Democrats' fault. This is another example of blaming the obstetrician for the baby. Except, in this case, the Republicans are the father, the Democrats are the obstetrician. The people of the country are the ones who are getting screwed. More about Stormy in a minute, but one magazine is publishing her claim that during their relationship, she once spanked Donald Trump with a Forbes magazine. That's Forbes magazine. This demonstrates terrible taste. When she, you know, could have just as easily used the Sunday New York Times. Nothing funny about this story, but after reports that a couple in California tortured 13 children, calls are being made for closer supervision of homeschooling parents. The homes in which homeschooling occurs in the United States has gone up to 1.7 million. And now since 2000, that's over the last presumably 17 years, because I know they don't have any real recent statistics, but since 2000, 380 cases of severe or fatal abuse of children have taken place in homeschooling homes. But torture and abuse aren't the most common problems. Ignorance on the part of the parents is. Most Republicans are not racist, but most racists are Republicans. Another example of that cropped up on Fox News. A guest on Tucker Carlson's show said that while white supremacists are American citizens, while undocumented aliens shouldn't be here. Rare and unbalanced. Now, we talked a moment ago, and you've previously heard about Stormy Daniels. Here's a story in case you haven't. Daniels, which is her nom de sex film, is a porn film star. She claims to have had a sexual relationship with Donald Trump before he became president, but after he married his current wife. Now, that's, of course, between the president and his wife. But it appears that Trump's lawyer engineered a payoff to her of about $130,000 during the 2016 campaign. Then, just as Trump has treated most people that he's had contracts with, he ended up not paying her or not fully paying her, thereby allowing her to disclose the relationship despite the non-disclosure agreement she signed. He breached, so she can. As he did to his other contractors, and as he's now doing to the rest of the country, he apparently also did to Stormy. But wait, his aides now admit that he paid her off to not disclose their sexual relationship, but they deny that then-private citizen Trump and Ms. Daniels had a sexual relationship. In short, the president is saying, I paid her off, but I didn't stoop her. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman, that's me. Tonight we'll talk about those stories and the nonsense related to tax cuts and jobs and minimum wages and jobs. And if you'd like, we'll take your calls, and in a moment or two I'll give out the phone number. I wanted to call a couple of things to your attention first. First of all, we recently saw a breakdown of where our audience is coming from. And besides all of the insane asylums, we have actually had listeners from most of the, well, not most, but a good many countries in the world, including, and I know Donald Trump would like this if he ever listened to the show, we have had some listeners in Norway. So hello to all our friends in Norway. I am assuming that you understand our version of English. At least I hope so. And thank you for listening from there and Britain and the rest of the world. Thank you very much. And, of course, the United States. Thank you very much for tuning into us and listening to the show. That struck me as kind of odd, frankly, happily, but unusual. Also, wanted to mention that we got word recently that we are on within Blog Talk Radio. We are the fifth most highly rated program among those that have hosts of mixed Moldovan and Ukrainian extraction. So, of course, we would be thrilled about that. If you would wish to support the program, you are welcome to do that by going to patreon.com, patreon.com/Jeff Bushman. I don't suggest you slash Jeff Bushman, but that's, you know, internet talk. Patreon.com/Jeff Bushman, and you can then contribute to the program if you would like to. The other things we wanted to mention to you is that if you would like to go to, this is more commercial stuff, if you would like to go to Amazon.com and look us up, you can see the three books we've got up there. Mobile Millionaire, about mobile home investing. Bobby's Been Shot, which is a mystery novel. And the ever popularly titled Amusing Sex, Funny Sex, which is a compilation of columns we wrote for about 4 years for a magazine in Scottsdale, Arizona. You would please us greatly if you took a look at those. You can actually read parts of it on Amazon sites, so you can decide whether it's something you actually want to buy. They're all e-books, and they're downloadable for about, pretty sure it's $2. It's either $2 or $2.99. I'm not sure which, but they are readable on, of course, Kindle devices. They're in Kindle format. But in case you didn't know this, you can actually download a Kindle reader to your phone, your tablet, or your computer without actually buying a Kindle Fire if you are not so inclined. Okay, that's pretty much the commercial messages. Let's talk about a couple of things that we talked about in the news. This thing about Stormy Daniels has been largely ignored by much of the media, except in very short bits. It's obviously a humorously salacious story about the peccadilloes of Mr. Trump in his pre-presidential days, but it's not really much of a surprise and won't affect his base in any fashion. As he correctly put it, he could go out on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and nobody who would otherwise vote for him would decide not to. And he said it, and frankly, that's one of the few things he's been right about. The story is interesting because of the fact that they did pay her off to keep her mouth shut, or they didn't pay her off. They made a deal to pay her off, and then they either only partially paid her off or they didn't pay her at all. I don't know which, but she's now, if you will, coming out with the story of their relationship, including that she once spanked him with a Forbes magazine. It's humorous to me, obviously, for a lot of reasons, but also I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about some of the weird kinks people have. I'm not judging. It's just that I guess I am judging partly because I said weird, but some of the weird inclinations some people have when they're talking about interest in the opposite sex, another old term. Opposite sex, but anyway, it's more of a spectrum. But anyway, just very strange stuff, including being spanked by Forbes magazine. The story about Stormy Daniels is that is that they have this relationship, and then they paid her to shut up. He claims that they never had a relationship, but they thought it wiser to pay her so she wouldn't talk during the campaign and possibly cost him votes. And frankly, if that were the truth, that's understandable. The problem with Trump is he tells the truth so rarely that you don't know when he is. You can't tell. That's obviously an ongoing problem. Okay. Homeschooling. Now, I have to tell you, I have a bias against homeschooling for a lot of reasons. Let me tell you what the reasons for my bias are. First off, I have family members who have been teachers. I have at least one friend who's a teacher. I think professional teachers do a better job schooling a kid than parents do, as a rule. Now, if your father is a retired teacher and your mom's a nuclear scientist or historian, okay, maybe they'll cover those subjects better than many professional teachers. But for the most part, the people who teach their kids at home are people who are not really all that necessarily knowledgeable about the subjects they're teaching their kids about. And that seems to me to be less than a brilliant idea. Over and above that, a lot of the parents who are homeschooling are doing so because they think the school's real moral and they're going to drum religion into their kids. Frankly, our society drums religion into kids enough and adults they probably don't need that help. But the essence of it is, besides the lack of socialization, and I understand the arguments against that concern, but aside from the lack of socialization, they also have a problem because the parents, as I said, just aren't necessarily knowledgeable. They get all these homeschooling books for assistance. But if I try to teach trigonometry, I don't care what books I had, I would be completely incompetent to do so. I could teach American history just fine. I could teach English pretty well. But when it comes to, as I said, trigonometry or chemistry or biology, it would be difficult to imagine kids having a worse teacher. But the distinction is, I recognize that. A lot of these folks who homeschool recognize their own limitations. So you end up having kids come out of these educational environments, either when they go to high school or should they go to college, with a real limited background. And you can only be as knowledgeable. One of the advantages of going to public schools, or private schools for that matter, is you go through the process of having a variety of teachers, and of course you can read. But what ends up happening is you don't end up with the lowest common denominator. You end up with a mixture of those teachers' abilities being transferred to the children, at least smart children. And with the homeschooling, you only have one or at most two teachers, and the best you can be is the best that one of them is. And that's really, really scary. Okay. We wanted to talk about a few other things real quick. It's about 12 minutes into the show. I don't know that we'll necessarily go the full hour, but if somebody wants to call, I may not take your call until after I talk about these next three items. But if you do want to call in, it's 646-668-2953, repeating 646-668-2953, and there's a reasonably good chance I may forget to give the number out again, so I hope you got that, but I'll try to remember. The other things I wanted to talk about were coal subsidies, and Bannon and testifying, and the tax cuts related to, and minimum wages relating to jobs. So let me first talk about Rick Perry. Rick Perry is the Secretary of Energy and the former governor of Texas, and if not the longest, at least one of the longest serving governors of Texas. And the truth is, although in the 2008 or 2012, came off looking like an idiot for a couple of reasons, the truth is he's a pretty bright guy. But during the Trump administration's bidding, he went before the Federal Energy Commission. And the actually, it's called the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Now, this has mostly Trump appointees on it. Okay, so this is not something that's overloaded with leftover Democrats. The proposal that Perry, on behalf of the administration, was bringing to this commission was that the government should require utilities to buy a substantial percentage of their energy from coal producers. And to the extent the coal was more expensive than other sources, the customers of the utilities should have to pay the difference just as part of their electric bill. This is Republican economists and Republican politicians have said for a long time that, to quote, government should not be in the business of picking winners and losers in the economy. Overall, frankly, that's a good viewpoint in my judgment. I think there are times when we need to make some differences. For example, what the government did was they initially subsidized solar and wind power, okay? And when they did that, and they did all kinds of things, giving tax credits to those who bought solar panels and the rest of it. Now those government subsidies are off. They would have come off anyway, automatically, but with the Trump administration in office, those so-called clean power sources are no longer subsidized, okay? All right. So what Perry proposed is, okay, we're not doing that anymore. Let's subsidize the coal companies by making the utilities buy coal-based energy. And his argument was that in order to have a stable, we have a more stable power grid if we use coal. The commission pointed out that this was insane. They didn't use that word, but silly. And the reason it was silly is because the power grid, while it certainly needs help, doesn't get any stronger or weaker by reason of what kind of energy source you use. It just doesn't. I, by the way, believe that we have a little problem with what's called net metering. Net metering says that if I have solar panels or wind power or anything else at my home, and I produce more energy than I need, or produce at certain times more energy than I need, I can take that power and send it through the grid back to the power company. Then when I use that power, of course, I take it out of my energy bank, as it were. I'm using the utility in that case as a battery. So I send it down the line to them, then I get it back, okay? And then if I have a surplus at the end of the month, the end of the billing month, they pay me at the same rate that I've been paying them, X number of cents per kilowatt hour, whatever that number is in your utility. I think the problem with that is that does cause more expense to the utility, which they're going to pass on to other ratepayers and me in the months when I don't have a net balance to them, but in fact I have the money. Because right now when they pay for electricity, they obviously pay less because they're a wholesale customer. They pay less than I pay. That's how the utilities make a profit. Nothing wrong with profit. I'm fully in favor of it, especially if it's mine. But the fact is, net metering causes a problem when there's a surplus in favor of the customer because the utility has to pay more than they would at the wholesale rates. So that's a problem. But I don't think there's any problem with if I use 20 kilowatt hours, if I produce 20 kilowatt hours more than I need this afternoon and I send that to the utility, and then tonight I end up using that 20 kilowatt hours and it's break even, glory hallelujah. Or even if, you know, I end up using 17 and they've still got 3 kilowatt hours left for tomorrow, that's fine too. But what the Trump administration proposal would have done would have been to cause the utilities to spend even more money on coal. And I should explain at this point that solar and wind power are now cheaper than coal power. They're not cheaper yet than oil, but they are cheaper than coal. In fact, the petroleum companies oppose this proposal as well. Because in part of the former government subsidies to get more solar power, more wind power online, now they don't need the subsidies. And now I buy power through my power company, through my utility, and they're buying some of their power that is produced either by them or by others through the utilization of solar panels, wind power, hydropower, all kinds of stuff. But and I never see which they're using. That's, you know, to most ratepayers, that's unimportant. Just tell me how much I owe you and let me write you a check. Boom, done. But this would have raised everybody's power rates because coal is more expensive than the other power sources. And the Republican-dominated committee rejected it as well. Okay, that's that story. And this way they don't get to pick winners and losers. Okay. We need to talk about Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon, actually, when we talk about Steve Bannon, we're really talking about the Trump administration, and I'll come to that. Steve Bannon was called before the House Intelligence Committee the other day. Of course, the joke is, since it's run by the Republicans, it's a question as to how much intelligence there is, but I never said that. So he was called before the House Committee on Intelligence and was asked to testify about what he knew about the Trump administration and its possible activities vis-a-vis the Russians, not just in terms of conspiring to change or fix the election results, but also in terms of possible money laundering. The White House asked him not to testify about anything he knew during the campaign or when he served with the administration or afterwards. And they never specifically exerted or asserted, I should say, so-called executive privilege, but they were implying that at some point in the future they might. There are several problems with that. First off, when he was working in the campaign, executive privilege wouldn't apply because there's no executive involved. He was just working in a campaign, number one. Number two, there is a good argument that among legal scholars that executive privilege doesn't reach as far as the White House wanted it to reach. And they, as I say, they never actually asserted it. But here's a couple of things that are worth noting. First off, Bannon is supposed to testify, I believe, next week, but in any event soon, before a grand jury that was impaneled by special counsel, special prosecutor Robert Mueller, former head of the FBI. And Mueller has said he will fully cooperate and will testify there, as distinguished from what he did in front of the House Intelligence Committee. One of the reasons that's of some value is even if the White House wanted to assert executive privilege, it can't in the grand jury situation. It can't legally because the special prosecutor is an appointee of the Justice Department. The Justice Department is part of the executive branch, as is, of course, the presidency, the White House. And you can't assert executive privilege within the same branch. Nixon tried that and it didn't work. So it's possible they can assert that and he'll refuse to testify and they'll have to go to court. But even with this Supreme Court, that should get taken care of that way. So they won't be able to assert the executive privilege. But I was discussing this with my friend Rick the other day, yesterday, in fact, I think. So hello, Rick, if you're listening or tune in later. They obviously, because they didn't assert privilege with any other witnesses, but did with Bannon, they're very concerned about what he knows and what he might say. Since they can't assert the privilege with the grand jury, and among other things, he can't have his lawyer in there with him. Among the concerns is they obviously don't want him to testify, so what are they going to do? Well, if this were a mystery novel instead of real life, they'd go find a way to kill him and make it look like an accident. So that would take care of that. But because it is real life, what could happen, and this is the concern I have, how do you stop Steve Bannon from testifying before the grand jury about what he knows with regard to Trump and the Russians or Trump and other Russians who were doing money laundering, for whom he was doing money laundering? How do you stop that testimony? How do you stop that from getting out there? Well, grand jury testimony is secret, so it may not come out in the public right away, but it will ultimately come out and may result, depending on what he says, could result in an indictment against Bannon, and conceivably could result in an indictment against other people, including possibly the president. Okay, if not by itself, at least that coupled with other testimonial evidence. Okay, so they obviously want to stop that testimony from coming out. So what do they do? As I said, if this were a mystery novel, they would kill Bannon to make it look like an accident. That's one. Second item. By the way, that's not just related to mystery novels. That actually happened in a country, I'm trying to remember, I think it could have been Brazil, but I'm not sure, where there was a prosecutor who was about to testify about government corruption. He somehow ended up dead, and they later figured out it was murder. Very spooky stuff. And I know it wasn't Venezuela, but it was somewhere, I'm pretty sure, in South America, and may have been Brazil. Again, I'm not sure. Okay, so that's one thing they could do. They could also, I suppose, find a basis on which to arrest Steve Bannon so that he would be incommunicado with regard to the grand jury, although they could obviously always get him to testify from jail or get him moved over for the testimony and then bring him back. The third thing, and that which is of greatest concern, unless you're Steve Bannon and don't want to, you know, suffer at the hands of the administration or their henchmen, the third thing is they could fire Robert Mueller. Okay, what happens if they fire Robert Mueller? Well, outside of the ruckus that would cause, the brouhaha, as they say. Outside of that, the other concern is that they would stop the grand jury because it was impaneled by a special counsel, so it would probably be terminated. And they would therefore not be able to take Bannon's testimony. Now, there may be some other way of doing it, but as far as I can guess, the three things, one of which is hopefully unrealistic, which is killing the witness. The second thing is arresting the witness. And the third thing is firing the special prosecutor. Now, we all know that firing the special prosecutor would be a bad idea in terms of public relations and politics, but Trump has weathered serious problems that would have sidelined anybody else before. And that hasn't happened for obvious reasons. But the concern is, of course, that is a possibility. And if he doesn't want to fire Mueller directly, he can order the person in the Attorney General's office who has charge of Mueller to fire him. That would be Rob Rosenstein, who has said he's not going to do it without good cause. And good cause doesn't include keeping his job. So he may order Rosenstein to do it, and if Rosenstein doesn't do it, he may fire Rosenstein and then go down the list of government employees. We saw something very similar during the Watergate period. Okay. Do I know for sure that's going to happen? Of course not. Do I think it might? Yeah. Do I think the odds are strong that that'll happen? No, but it's a possibility. Do I think I should stop asking myself questions? Of course. Okay. That takes care of that issue. Now I'd like to go back into something we talked about a couple of weeks ago. That is, we talked about macroeconomics. We're going to do that a little bit without getting too deeply in the weeds. Although if somebody wants to smoke some weed while I'm talking, you're more than welcome to do that. There have been some conversations, mostly by Republicans, who are saying that the tax cuts are creating jobs. There are people who are hiring more people because of tax cuts. And I want to call BS or nonsense on that. People don't hire people because of tax cuts. We went into that a little bit last time, a couple of weeks ago. That is, why does somebody hire somebody or not hire somebody? And I'll come back to that in just a minute. And the other thing is jobs and minimum wages. Covering that more briefly, Republicans always like to say that, now again, not all Republicans, but conservative establishment Republicans say, okay, if you raise the minimum wage, you will reduce the number of jobs. And I think it was Tom Hartman who first said this, and if not, I'll credit him anyway. The response is, when did that happen? And when someone says that minimum wage increases will reduce jobs, and you say, when did that happen? They look at you strangely. And the response is, look, if that had ever happened, where minimum wage went up and jobs dropped precipitously, then every conservative economist and every conservative politician would say, well, in 1949, on January 17th, they raised minimum wages, and by March, the unemployment rate had gone up by one-tenth of one or one-half of 1%, whatever it is. But they don't do that because they cannot establish by historical proof, and minimum wage has been raised numerous times in numerous states, and they cannot point to a single time when they can demonstrate that jobs were reduced because the minimum wage went up. In fact, there is some evidence that the opposite is true, but that's not clear, frankly, either. And let me also give a point to my opposition. The fact that you can't point to where jobs went down doesn't mean that a minimum wage increase did not have a negative effect on the economy and jobs. Here's why. If we increase the minimum wage by, say, $1 an hour today, okay, and a month or 2 months from now, unemployment goes down instead of going up, or job production goes way up, does that mean that the minimum wage increase caused that? The answer is no, it does not necessarily mean that. Likewise, if the wages did go down, it wouldn't necessarily mean if job production went down, it wouldn't necessarily mean that was a result of the increase in minimum wage either. The truth is that when you're talking about an economy, especially one as large as ours, it's very difficult to establish a cause-effect relationship. And when jobs improve, that is, the number of jobs go up, an obvious question is, okay, but how much would they have gone up without the increase in minimum wage? And the answer is nobody knows. But and nobody knows ever if they've gone down because of that, again, or reduced the increase or, you know, whatever. The point is that those things are very difficult, if not impossible, to demonstrate. Even if the perceived result does occur, you can't say that that the only or primary cause was the increase in minimum wage. That's complete nonsense. By the way, I was about to tell you the time here in the Mountain Time Zone while we're broadcasting live. It is, I will tell you that anyway, it's about 7:30. or if you prefer, wherever you are, it's half past the hour. By the way, that's not true. As an interesting side note, I think it's interesting, and if you don't, you know, get your own podcast. Interesting side note is time zones only came about in the end of the 19th century as a means of standardizing train schedules in the United States. Later spread pretty much worldwide. But in actual fact, because of where the sun is in position to the in relation to the Earth, every 13 miles as you go east is a minute later, 1 minute, by sun time. Okay? I'm not referring to the Chicago sun time, but by sun time, it's 1 minute later every 13 miles. So, but in order to standardize train schedules, which would be impossible by saying, okay, at the you know, as you approach the city of Springfield, it's 12:35. As you leave the city of Springfield, it's 12:39. It would become impossible to deal with. So the government standardized time zones, as I say, as a means. They were behind the process of being done by railroad companies. But railroad companies were the first entities that created time zones in the United States. But if you go to some countries, most countries have the same system we do, which is regardless of where you are, even if you're in different time zones, it's always, throughout the country, it's right now 31 minutes after the hour. Okay, that's true throughout the entire United States, as I'm speaking, it's 31 minutes after the hour. And that's that. And again, you could be in the Eastern zone, the Pacific zone, whatever. But in some countries, they don't have that standardization. And Russia is one example of that, where, say, in Moscow, it could be 7:30, but in a city far to the east, instead of being, say, 8:30 or 9:30, it might be 8:15 or 8:12 or 7:40. They are much more geared to the sun time than they are to the standardization of time zones. So I just thought you might find that interesting. Okay, getting back to the thing with the tax with jobs, let's talk about tax cuts and jobs, okay? I run a company. It's not a major conglomerate, but it is nonetheless a company. And I have some people who do, on an as-needed independent contractor basis, do work for me, okay? Now, I will not, if I get some benefits from this tax cut, I'm not going to go look to hire more people. What for? The people who are working now are doing great jobs and are giving me as much time as I need in the field for what I do. So, and at my desk. So, if I have enough people to do that, why would I hire somebody else because I get more money? I would take that money and bank it or pocket it and say, thank you very much. But I wouldn't necessarily go out and hire a brother-in-law or a cousin just because there's more money in the kitty. There's no need. What would they do? Likewise, hiring decisions are made on the basis that somebody who you're putting into, if you're an employer, someone who you're putting into a position is either going to make you a more profit. They're going to make you more than you're spending on their salary or wages, or they're freeing you, the owner, up to produce more. So, in the latter case, it's something of a cost center rather than a profit center, but it will lead to more profits, presumably. And if I'm wrong, then that person won't be around very long, or they'll be doing something else within the company. That's essentially it. You hire them when they're going to make you more money or free you to make more money, right? If I have to pay out more in taxes than I'm paying now, I'm not going to hire fewer people. I'm not going to tell someone, hey, listen, you've been great, but they raised my taxes, so I'm sorry, I won't be using you anymore. No. That's not how it works. And when you are told that's how it works, you're being sold a bill of goods. Okay. So that's jobs and taxes and jobs and minimum wage. If you would like to participate, we'll probably only continue for a few more minutes because, to be honest, excuse me, I'm getting tired. We are trying to line up a guest for next week, and excuse me, and with any luck, we'll do that. I was just checking my email because I had sent an email out to somebody just seeing if I had a reply, and I do not. So that's basically that. In the meantime, if you would like to call in and talk about any of the things we've just talked about, feel free to do that at 646-668-2953. As I said, we'll do this for another couple of minutes if we don't get a call. And if we do, of course, we'll talk as long as we can. You can probably tell, if you've heard the show before, that my voice is starting to go because, frankly, of fatigue. It's been a long week. It's not just in Washington. It's been a long week everywhere. And, of course, I don't have the energy drain that Donald Trump did when he was with Stormy. God, I can't believe that. Anyway, wanted to see if there was anything else. The big news, as I said, was the fact that the government could shut down, the U.S. government could shut down tonight at midnight Eastern time, which is about an hour and a half from right now. The Democrats, so you know, there's an old saying. The old saying is, if you don't stand for something, you'll pretty much stand for anything. And I'm really glad if they maintain this position that the Democrats are saying, no, we're not going to vote for another continuing resolution, which is basically saying, let's just keep spending at the current levels on everything for another week or month, whatever it is. That's what a continuing resolution is. They've said, we're not going to do that. What we're going to do is we are going to not vote in favor of any funding until and unless you include the CHIPS program, which the Republicans have agreed to in the House, and the we do something for the so-called Dreamers, those who were assisted by DACA before Trump knocked it out. These are just as a reminder to anybody who's been living in a cave. These are the kids, some of whom are, many of whom are now adults, who came to this country without any decision on their own part. They were brought to the country illegally when their parents came illegally to the country and they were children. Now, today and yesterday, is the Republicans are saying that the Democrats are holding off funding the government and funding the military and agreeing to fund the Child Health Insurance Program, also known as CHIP, because they're trying to favor those who came into the country illegally. No, the only ones who came into the country illegally that they're trying to favor are those who came into the country illegally without any volition on their part. They came because their parents took them. I moved from Chicago to Los Angeles when I was a child because that's where my parents moved. They said, we're moving to Los Angeles. And many people have had that same experience. Not with my parents, of course, but only one other person had that experience that I know of. The reality is when you're a kid, you don't have a choice. You go where mom and dad take you. And that's the crime these kids committed. They went with their parents to the United States from other countries. Mostly the countries they came from are south of our own border, but not all. And also we have a lot of illegal immigration from other countries. It's not unusual to have illegal immigrants from Ireland and England. Mostly those are folks who overstay their visas. But whatever they're doing, an illegal or undocumented alien is an undocumented alien, regardless of where they're from. And one of the things that many people have noticed is that the people who come here from other countries, illegally or legally, are coming to support their families. They can't get enough work. They can't get enough food where they come from. So they come here and often go back just because they get enough money where they can feed the family. They go back and get whatever work they can there and will come back again when money runs out. But they're doing is trying to support their family. And frankly, if I were in that position, I would do the same damn thing. You go, you do what you have to do to help your family out. You don't let them starve. And they don't have the same kind of social welfare programs in places like Mexico and El Salvador that we have here. So in any event, that's what the Democrats are doing. They are to be praised for that. And I will just take a quick look and see if there is any additional news on the shutdown. My guess is there is not, but I will let you know that so you don't have to switch off and go there. Just a moment here. And my best guess is, okay, there is a plan about 20 minutes from now to vote on a bill to, as they say, avert a government shutdown. Senator Graham has proposed a three-week extension, and I will tell you that I hope that doesn't go through. And the reason I hope that is because if they get the 3 weeks, they won't even talk about any deal until 2.5 weeks have passed, and they could do all of this now. If they can't do it now, just let it shut down. And once it's shut down, it may very well be that the Republicans come to the table, which they have not done. Anyway, that's all the news that isn't, as they say. And in terms of next week, we will, of course, announce in a bunch of different places where who the guest is, assuming we get one set up. And I do make that assumption because I am committed to doing it. We have talked to some of our other our earlier guests, and I'm trying to get a couple of others. And if you have a suggestion as to who we might want to invite to appear on the program, don't be shy. Send us a note at T as in Tom, J as in Joe, B as in boy, tjbradio@gmail.com. With that, I want to wish you all a very good week. It's probably getting a little late to wish everyone a happy new year, but I do. I want to thank our producer of the show, our chihuahua, Autumn Bushman, who has been in the room with me since, she just left. Anyway, she was in the room earlier, and she was a major help in production of tonight's show, so because she didn't growl or bark. Anyway, please do join us next week. If you didn't like the show, drop us a note. If you did like the show, tell a friend to join you in listening next week. And in the meantime, please be kind to each other and don't go away mad. And somewhere, it's around midnight. Good night, everybody.